welcome to the final episode, minute 93 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast where we take a wild trip to the 1987 John Hughes comedy Planes, Trains, and Automobiles 1 minute at a time. Now, I just said the final episode, but it's the final episode of season two. It's not the final episode of Movie Around Minute because I will be continuing tomorrow with season three, but we'll get to there later. But for minute 93, which isn't even a minute, we only have about 26 seconds of screen time to be talking. So I decided that I'm going to invite back my good friend Jake Cluett of the Deep Blue Sea podcast, the upcoming Con Air podcast, and Life versus Film to help close out this season. So welcome back to the show, Jake.
Thank you, Rob. Happy to be here.
Yeah, it has been a wild trip through Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. No question about that.
It's been almost as wild listening to it.
I appreciate that. I appreciate that there's at least one person listening. I know there are more, but I appreciate everyone who's listening. You know, feel free. You know, you can all send me feedback. It's always appreciated. Hopefully it'll be positive feedback, but negative feedback or constructive criticism feedback is also appreciated and accepted. You know, I don't have to listen to what you say, but hopefully you'll have something nice to say to me.
The best way to ask for feedback is to tell people you will not be listening to it. That will guarantee you feedback.
Does that really work? No. I don't think so. All right, so minute 93 begins with the tail end of the Hughes logo and ends with Bryant getting even more frustrated. So basically, for the last few days, we've been talking about all the credits in the movie. You know, and with most movies, especially back in the 80s, that was it. I mean, you have credits, and there's not going to be an end credit scene. You know, you don't have the stuff that you have from the MCU. You know, for the last 15 years, we've all become more accustomed to the fact that at the end of a movie, you actually have to sit through the credits in order to see a few little clips of things that might be helpful or might not be helpful or might be funny. You know, you never really know. The MCU has given us a lot of different options like that. You know, sometimes you're sitting through a movie and they have like this one little gag all the way at the end and that's it. But sometimes they have pretty integral stuff there that lets you know what's coming next or whatever it is. So for a movie from 1987 to have a tail end clip is pretty amazing from my perspective.
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of hoping the scene would continue and Sam Jackson would appear and try and recruit Brandt for some initiative he's trying to start. Or would it have been Hasselhoff at the time, actually?
It might have been, yeah.
There we go. But yeah, sadly not the case. This is just a little cap on joke in the film. Hey, this guy's still in the office. He's still there. It's Thanksgiving and he's still there.
Yeah,
Which is supposed to be a joke, but to me, it's incredibly sad.
Yes, it's completely sad that he's still sitting there trying to figure out what to do.
Like, we just had the quite dramatic reveal of Dell's past, his history, towards the end of the film. Then get the credits to kind of like recover from that. And then, oh my God, this guy's in maybe an even worse situation. Because like, he's sat there, he's still working. He's got the full works of his Thanksgiving dinner in front of him, untouched, an entire turkey carved, beautifully presented on his plate, which he would have had no part in.
Well, no, we see that there are two slices that are carved off of it.
You know, I doubt he's the one who carved them, is what I'm saying. I think that was presented to him
by the secretary or whatever.
Yes. Yeah. It could be. I was trying to think, so who has sent him this? Is his wife trying to do this? But I checked his fingers, there's no ring. I'm guessing maybe he was married at some point. She left him because he keeps on working.
Because he doesn't come home for Thanksgiving dinner. He's too busy trying to figure out which Ibis poster to use.
Yes, which it's they're all the same. I know they are different, but they will all have the same effect marketing-wise, I assume.
But I think that's the point. That they're so similar that he has so much trouble deciding because of that. You know, it's not as if he's... You know, he's looking at one of them and say, wow, this one's amazing. All the rest are crap. They're all great, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm also not a marketing person. I have no idea which of these, you know, would make me want to buy lipstick. I don't know. Probably none.
I would say, given how similar they are in effectiveness, that's maybe a fault of the artwork team of Neil and his crew, that they've given such similar responses to the brief and nothing kind of different enough. to make it more easy to pick between.
It could be. Interesting. Yeah, that's true. Now, I mean, first of all, I love the fact of what we see on the table here. So besides the turkey, so we see the turkey, there's like stuffing falling out of the turkey. You know, you have all the garnish underneath with you see the tomatoes and the lettuce and stuff like that. You see a pie in the distance, which I'm assuming is like a pumpkin pie or something like that. Yeah, you see a plate, yeah, which you can't really tell what's on it, but it's pretty empty. It looks maybe from a distance that maybe has like cookies on it or something like that because of the
maybe that's
the color.
Maybe that's for the pie slice to go on. There's already a bit of whatever you would have with pumpkin pie. I've never had pumpkin pie.
I don't know. Maybe someone was eating with him and they actually got up and left.
Maybe. Can you tell what's on the foil between surrounded by a few, some of the seven cups? It's like a square of it. Looks like foil to me. Like
okay, pink. Well, first of all, that's his ashtray. Remember, we were trying
to figure out. It's the ashtray.
It's the ashtray, and we can see that it has at least one cigarette on there.
Okay.
But I'm then there is other stuff on there that I can't tell. I don't know what that pink stuff is. You know, maybe he was eating some sort of hard candy or something like that. I don't know.
Maybe because the British equivalent to Thanksgiving dinner is Christmas dinner. I know that you have Christmas in America and other countries, but we don't have Thanksgiving in this country for numerous reasons. And
because the pilgrims didn't come to England, they actually ran from England.
Exactly.
Well, then again, so maybe that's the reason that you guys should celebrate it, that the pilgrims left. Thank God those guys went away.
Maybe. But we have this giant meal at Christmas generally. But we'll have a starter, and in my family, we would always have a starter of prawn cocktail with smoked salmon. Prawn cocktail?
I don't know what that is.
It's basically prawns in a seafood sauce.
Oh, okay. I don't eat seafood. I don't know.
About of course, yes, Chris.
No, but you don't have to remember that. I do. You know.
But that's what we would have for a starter, and with prawns, you sometimes have the ones with the big tails that you don't eat the tail. So I was thinking, like, have they had some kind of a starter here? And that's like the remnants of the prawn tails that you have to eat.
Yeah, no, I don't think so.
No, it's an ashtray.
It's definitely an ashtray. I mean, you might want to put prawn tails on an ashtray. I don't know.
I don't smoke, so that's the only thing I'd use it for.
Neither do I, so I wouldn't know. Yeah. Now, what I love about the cups, you see that they have
seven.
You mentioned
seven styrofoam cups.
Styrofoam cups. Filled with something, presumably coffee. But if you look, just about every one of them is about a third of the way filled. So he hasn't even finished any of them. You can see that 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of them are. You can easily see that there's something in those cups.
Well, I don't think they're all. My guess would be they're not all coffee. I think some of them. I think one of them might be like cranberry sauce for him to have with his food.
I don't know.
Well, one of them. The one kind of in the middle of the seven seems to have some red. So the red sauce on it or a stirrer sticking out. It's a stirrer because there's like three other stirrers littered around the surface.
Yeah, exactly.
Stirrer. Okay. I thought it could be cranberry sauce. One could be gravy. Because there's no like gravy receptacle there if he wants to top up.
Right. Well, that's the thing. There's no gravy receptacle, but there is gravy on his mashed potatoes.
Yes, which that's not enough gravy for that whole plate of food.
Right.
So he's going to need more gravy.
Right, so he has gravy, there's mashed potatoes on there, which, again, you know, we don't see mashed potatoes in a different plate, so maybe that plate beforehand was with mashed potatoes. Then he has, like, what are those, collard greens or something like that on there, along with the stuffing?
At the back, I thought they were Brussels sprouts.
Ah, Brussels sprouts, there you go, Brussels sprouts.
My guess.
Yeah, I'm not a greenery eater, so I
neither am I.
I noticed it, but I couldn't remember what it was actually, what it was called. You're right, those are Brussels sprouts.
What are like the brown kind of cylinders at the nearest to us?
Yeah, well, what they look like is they look like potato, you know, like puffs like, or something like that.
Croquettes, maybe?
Something, but, you know, I have no idea. My first thought was is that maybe it was something from the pie or something like that, but I don't know.
Yeah, the pie is untouched. I mean, this is something I don't know what it is, but you have, well, I think yams are sweet potatoes, but could that be?
Ah, those are probably yams. Those may be, that's true. They may be yams or sweet potatoes. It's very true.
Just what I've picked up on from watching American media.
There's
Thanksgiving everywhere. Everyone has to make yams. I was like, what is this?
Right. I love...
You can put marshmallow on top. Okay.
Right. I love the fact that he looks completely disheveled. He looks like he hasn't showered in a few days. You know, his tie is backwards.
He's wearing the same clothes since Tuesday.
And maybe... No, Steve Martin was, when Neil made that comment, he was wearing the same underwear from Tuesday. Yes. But even though that was Wednesday. On Wednesday, he says he's wearing the same underwear from Tuesday.
But he said that it was Wednesday night, and he'd been wearing it since Tuesday morning. So I think it's still a valid complaint.
It's a valid complaint, but not necessarily as valid as you would think. I don't know.
So I can't remember. Are these the same clothes that Brandt was wearing on my first appearance there back in week one?
I think it was, but we should probably go to the tape and double check that, because I think it is. My assumption is that it is the exact same clothes, but it's very simple to find these things out. That's what the internet is for, and that's also what having a copy of the movie does. You know, so when we get to see Brandt,
I'm on it now.
Yes, he is.
He's wearing the same tie.
It's the same tie. I'm assuming it's the same. But and there he's, you know, freshly showered.
Yeah.
You know, you can see that there's a difference there. You know, but he's still got the same glasses on. I assume that they filmed this right same one after
day,
the other at the same day.
When, yeah, they would.
You know, they got William Wyndham to show up just for one day.
So they shoot those first scenes and then they dishevel him up, make him run around the block a few times.
I'm not sure if they would make him run around the block, but you know, you don't necessarily do that to a 60 or 70 year old actor just to be able to get the effect.
It's called acting. Yes,
that's right. You don't have to. He doesn't have to do the method acting of okay, go running up and down the street. You know, in the middle of Times Square, and then we'll take a picture afterwards. You know, I don't know.
Yeah. So why is he looking at the board as if he's lying on the floor with it above his head? How's that going to
happen? Okay. So no. So that's the thing I like also. You see that he takes it and he puts it up against the. You know, I'm assuming he's looking at it through the light. You know, how does it look when you have, you know, light coming from the back.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that.
I mean, it doesn't help. I don't know how it really helps here. And then
the kind of poster board that's on, that's not the kind of thing it will be mounted on eventually when it's decided upon.
Well, the question of what type of light he has there. You know, maybe he has a very strong light in his office. I mean, we talked about how huge his office was, you know, all those months ago. So you never know.
Talking about the light in his office, I'm not sure if they're just really shiny floor tiles or there's light emitting from the floor around the outside of the room. There's like this row of bright
on the side, yeah.
Yeah. Is there light coming through those or that light reflecting from above, do you think?
I think it's light reflecting from above.
I kind of want it to be from like light coming from the floor.
That would be really cool. That would definitely be very cool. I mean, I'm assuming that that this is a real office. They didn't just make up an office to do this. They probably just went and shot it in somebody's office.
Yes, I'd hope so. Yeah.
So, you know, so maybe someone doesn't. It looks like the you know, instead of the yellow brick road, it's the silver brick road.
Yes. <yeah. laughs> Where does it lead?
No one knows.
Is he the man behind the curtain? Is there somebody else he needs to show this to get approval?
Well, again, I mean, take it. I mean, the irony of this is that he's been looking at these for 3 days. You know, that's just absurd.
He hasn't left the office. Everything else he's done, he's been conducting from that room, just trying to pick between these three things. Which, if that is the case, he needs one thing to do in that situation. You take a break. You go and do something else. You change your what you're thinking about to come back, and then that'll help you pick.
Right. The question is whether you know, as you said, he's, I guess his company is Ibis. You know, he's the one making the decision as to which ad to use.
Maybe. Or I would assume there's some kind of parent company, of which Ibis is just one of the branches to be in such. To have an office in New York, that's not just for one makeup brand, right. I would guess.
That's true. Were those conglomerates?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's possible, but we'll never know. This is not something that they go into.
No, this is not integral to the film.
Not even close to being integral. You know what's funny is that, you know, in Hughes's previous movie, you know, Ferris Bueller's Day Off. So there he had also this little tail end, you know, scene where, you know, you have Ferris, which you for some reason are a little familiar with, where he says, you know,
It's over.
What are you still doing here? It's over. Go home.
Yes, I may have cut the audio and put it at the end of a podcast I hosted for 7 years.
Yeah, so and every episode. That,
many, many times.
Does Richard still use it?
He has changed it recently to, at the end of, there's a similar tag at the end of Spider-Man No Way Home.
Ah, okay.
Which is a character saying it's over. I'm not sure if that's the case every episode, but recently he has put that on there. Which, hey, great. That's his own.
No, that's fine. Not a problem. Exactly. I'm fine with that too. But I just find it really funny that, you know, I guess he was trying to get people to start thinking that John Hughes movies have a final scene at the end that you need to come watch. Could that be?
Maybe. I mean, I guess if there's a little joke you can think of to put at the end, then great. I don't know how many of his other films had such a tag.
I'm not familiar with any others that do.
I don't think The Breakfast Club did.
No, it didn't. It didn't.
Trying to think of Weird Science. Weird Science could have had something with Chet. I feel
You know what? I think it did. I think it did. I think Chet was sitting there because he was still transformed at the end.
Oh, was he turned back at the end of Weird? It's been such a long time since I saw Weird Science.
I believe he was still transformed into that
blobified.
Big blob of crap. yeah, I'm pretty sure. I mean, according to IMDb on Weird Science, as the credits begin to roll, we have Kelly LeBrock smiling and winking. But
yes, because she's the new gym teacher.
Right.
At the school, yeah.
Correct, but it doesn't say anything here on IMDb about it. But any other type of final credit. No, but I'm assuming also that he would probably only do it on the ones that he was the director, not the ones that he was, you know. So we don't have that many. It's 16 Candles, as far as I know, doesn't have anything at the end. No. According to IMDb, there's no crazy credits. The Breakfast Club, the crazy credits are... No, just that it's a freeze frame of Bender. With the fist bump. Ferris Bueller we know about. She's having a baby and Uncle Buck. She's having a baby. Nope, they don't have that. And Uncle Buck, I believe, just has like a freeze frame. No, actually there is. And in Uncle Buck, you get, as the movie finishes, John Candy's voice yells, "Wake up!" Followed by the sound of an air horn and John laughing. So I guess he did make this a signature of his movies. I mean, he only had 8 that he directed, but still,
yeah, sure.
You know, it's not the same as with the MCU, but I wonder if it was decided. You know, I mean, we know that you know, John Favreau is a big fan of. You know, stuff from the 70s and 80s. So I wonder if he would, you know, thought of the idea to, you know, to put in the credit scenes because of John Hughes. That would be mind-blowing if that was the reason.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, like said to Kevin Feige, I got this great idea. You know, John Hughes used to do this thing, you know, where at the very end you have like this little thing just to make people stay and watch the whole thing. You're like, oh, that's a great idea. And now, you know, almost 30 movies later, you know, they've done it, and I think there's like one that doesn't have it.
And the MCU, Avengers Endgame just has like a clanking Iron Man kind of noise.
Right.
But I think the rest of them all have something, because you'd be so disappointed to wait till the end of the credits and there'd be nothing. But as for Planes, Trains, they should change nothing. It's a perfect film.
That's right. That's right. Even, especially when you go through the entire script and you realize that just about everything they cut out of the script was perfectly cut. There's a few minor things that I've talked about over the last 92 episodes, which maybe they should have kept in a little bit here and there. But in general, John Hughes got it right, and he knew what needed to be cut out and what to keep in.
I agree. Yeah. So,
yeah. And
I know you mentioned it every other episode, but I'm so glad they cut out the his wife being annoyed with him and thinking he's cheating. So,
yeah, for sure. No, I mentioned it because it was a lot. It was in the script, but I didn't mention that I wanted them to keep it. Did I mention that I wanted them to keep it?
No, not at all. I was saying I agree.
No, okay.
I agree.
Ah, you know that sorry. I think you mentioned that I mentioned the fact that this happened. Well, because it appears. That's why I would mention it, you know. So, So, you have anything else you want to say about this particular 26 seconds?
I think we've covered all 26 seconds. I'm going to assume you talked about the funky music during the credits in the previous one,
Yes, we talked a little bit about
which
that.
is
Which is,
delightful.
it's delightful, but it's also a rehash because it was in the movie itself.
Yes, yeah. No, I think we covered it.
Okay, so again, we have nothing to talk about the differences in the script because this isn't in the script even.
Was
This
going
whole
to say,
scene.
is this even
No,
in
this scene is not in the script. I guess they thought of it on the day that they were filming William Wyndham and said, "Hey, why don't we just keep you around for a few minutes? We'll bring over some stuff that makes it look like you're still sitting
Quick,
here on
someone get me a
Thanksgiving."
fully cooked turkey and Thanksgiving dinner. Stat.
Well, I gotta say, the turkey, if you look at the turkey, it doesn't look real.
It looks like a cartoon turkey.
Yes, it looks very fake.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I would, they didn't need to get someone to go sit and cook a 4-hour turkey or whatever it is. They said, let's get
William
a
Wyndham,
plastic
please wait
turkey.
here.
That's right. Wait here, and we'll let you drink 7 cups of coffee in the meantime while we're
Don't finish
waiting.
any of
No, we'll just pour some liquid back into each and every one of them. All right. So the segment that we do every day, we will continue to do today. So we have a off the beaten track, which is a story that either myself or my guest will give about some adventure or misadventure that one of us might have had along the way. And in the intervening months since Jay was last on, he couldn't think of any other stories that happened to him.
I haven't been anywhere.
You've just been podcasting, and it's not
Just
it,
been
that that's
podcasting.
and that's on the beaten track, not off.
It's
There you go.
very boring stories of me cycling to work and back every day. It's the only travel I do.
Well, sometimes boring is good too. Sometimes, you
Well,
don't
I
want
cycled to
things.
work the other day, and I
Right.
got there, and I cycled home, and I arrived home.
There you go. Well, thank you for that story, Jay. Right. So everyone will now get actually another story from me because I've given a few sporadic stories over the course of these 93 episodes, but most of the time I was very pleased to get some great stories from all of my guests. But today I will give another story, which in my opinion is probably one of the most dramatic stories that I have about this. And I kept pushing it off and not using it each time, and this time I now can do it. So this happened on October 8th, 1989. Okay,
I was two.
you were two. Okay, I was a little bit older than two. I was 15 at the time. And I remember that I had gone on a weekend excursion with a youth group that I was a part of. So we had the counselor who drove us. She drove us in a van. There were a group of, I think, about 15 of us. We drove in a van from Detroit to Indianapolis for the weekend. We probably got there Thursday, Friday, something like that. We came back on Sunday. Sunday, we were driving back Sunday, I guess, mid-afternoon, and it started raining. And at some point, the van started to swerve, and we ended up hitting an 18-wheeler that was right in front of us. Okay, so I mean, looking back at how this whole thing happened, apparently because of the rain, there was maybe an accident above ahead or something like that, but the traffic all slowed down, and the driver of our van, she saw that everything came to a standstill before she slammed on the brakes, and there was a little car that was between us and this 18-wheeler, and she somehow managed quite effectively to hit the side, the I think it was the bottom right-hand side of this little car to push it out of the way so that it wouldn't go into the 18-wheeler, and then we went into the 18-wheeler. Okay, and I remember everyone in the van was completely shocked. I still remember to this day the driver of the 18-wheeler and his wife coming out with a video camera and videotaping everything in order to be able to show the damage and stuff like that. Obviously, they made sure that everyone was okay first, but
Yeah.
they for insurance purposes, they needed to make sure that they had a full documentation of it. And remember, this was the 1980s. The late 1980s, so they had this huge video camera. It wasn't like a little handheld, not like nowadays where everybody just uses a cell phone or you know, back in the early 90s when people had smaller video cameras, this was a big one. You know, this is the type you see, you know, like in movies where they show, a good example would probably be like in Die Hard or Die Hard 2, you know, where you have the people with the big, huge cameras on their shoulders and stuff like that, you know, taking pictures.
Those things are the big ghetto blasters people would carry on their shoulder.
Exactly. Exactly. Like it's a ghetto blaster camera. That's what it was. And eventually, the police came and they ended up having to tow the van because the van couldn't drive anymore. And I remember they pulled us onto the tow truck. You know, we were all still in the van as they pulled us onto the tow truck. And the tow truck drove us to the nearest town, which was which is called Lewisburg, Ohio. And we spent many hours there trying to figure out how we were going to get back from Lewisburg, Ohio to Detroit. You know, there really wasn't any way of us knowing how to get. I mean, we're all teenagers, and, you know, the counselor who drove us, she must have been in her late 20s, early 30s, something like that. I don't know exactly how old she was. And eventually there was a group of people that were at this conference with us over the weekend that were from Dayton, or maybe it was Columbus. No, I think it was Columbus. So the people from Columbus drove to Lewisburg, picked us all up, and brought us to the Greyhound station in Columbus. And then we all got on buses, and we ended up getting home at like 3 o'clock in the morning that day. We had a very, very long day, but thankfully, you know, nobody was hurt. We were all, you know, we all got back safely. I remember hearing the following day from people that they heard about the accident. They heard that a few of the kids were killed, you know, like all the rumors that were going around at the beginning. You know, because this was also, you know, 1989, there were no cell phones, there was no internet, or at least not, there were cell phones, there were internet, but nobody was using them, you know, especially not a bunch of teenagers in the U.S. Midwest. So, you know, people had heard all these rumors and people were crying because they heard that certain people were killed in this huge accident and stuff like that. So, you know, a little story from almost 33 years ago, but it's still fresh in my mind, you know, about the day where I remember where I was sitting. I was actually sitting in the first row of the van where when we stopped, I was pushed forward, you know, between the two bucket seats of the van. So, yeah, that's my little off the beaten track story that is probably the most harrowing of all of my stories that I've told. Not that I've really told very many harrowing ones. You know, a few ones where I've done illegal things, but, you know, nothing.
Yeah, when you, like,
nothing death defying.
Took a handgun across.
I did not take a handgun. I took a full clip of ammunition for an M16. That story was actually retold last week. You know, for anyone who missed it at the beginning when I first told it, the second week of this podcast. So it was retold last week to one of my guests who had a similar story where she was talking about almost getting caught with marijuana by going over a border. So I mentioned my story again, because
whenever we'd fly anywhere as children going on holiday, my sister always take this little solitaire game with her. Little wooden disc, the size of a coaster, that would spin open to have the little things you play solitaire with inside. But they were metal, and they weren't shaped like bullets, but they were kind of close.
Oh, wow.
Just like little metal pins. So every time, everywhere went, she always got pulled aside to have the open up to see what these things were. And she kept on bringing it every time. So she kept on delaying all of
it. Well, why would she care? It was your parents who got upset, not her. It's not like they're not going to be strip searching a toddler or however old she was at the time, you know.
Like 12, 15, I don't know.
Exactly.
Without she keep bringing it. Like, anyway. But yeah, I've been fortunate to never really been in any car accidents or crashes or anything. I mean, I've been knocked off my bike a couple of times, but nothing too serious. My bike got totaled once.
Oh, wow. You actually just reminded me of another story I could tell.
Where I got hit. Were you the driver who totaled my bike?
No, I actually got hit when I was on a bike. I remember, I'll tell another story. I remember this was probably in 1987. My grandparents were coming to visit us, and, you know, they were driving from New Jersey to Detroit. And again, there was no no cell phones at the time, and we expected them to get to us by a certain time. Let's say they were supposed to be by, I said, 4 o'clock. I don't know what it was. So by 5 o'clock, they still hadn't been there. So, you know, my mother sent me out to go look for them. And so I borrowed my sister's 10-speed bike and just started driving around the subdivision looking for my grandparents. And as I was driving, as I was riding my bike past a little area where there were some stores, so I was going across the driveway. I was on the sidewalk going across where the cars come out, and a car just like sped past and hit me. And I got thrown off the bike. And I remember that the guy got out. He looked to me at the time completely stoned. And he said to me, "Are you all right?" And I said, "Yeah." He said, "Okay." And he got in his car and drove away. Okay. And then, you know, I got to my senses. My arm was killing me. And I saw that my sister's bike that I had borrowed, her front wheel was completely misconstrued. You know, so I couldn't drive. I couldn't ride back. And this was about a mile from my house. So I had to walk back the entire mile because, again, I couldn't call anyone. I had to walk back carrying the bike by lifting it up partially. And a few people stopped on the way asking me if I'm okay. And I said, "Yeah, you know, I think I'm okay." You know, because they couldn't do anything to help me either. You know, I didn't need to go to the hospital.
Bye, good. See ya. Bye.
More or less. And I finally got home, and apparently my grandparents showed up 5 minutes after I left, you know, and I had sprained my arm from that little ordeal. But, yeah. So, yeah, well, see, you get two for the price of one. Two off the meeting jack stories.
Sorry, I'll chuck in mine. Let's make it a threefer.
There you go.
So when I got knocked off my bike, it was 2011. My now wife, then girlfriend, I stayed at her house overnight when I cycled to work. So I took a different route than I normally took, and it required turning right at a roundabout. This is the UK, driving the left. And so I was all clear to go. I had the right of way, but there was a builder's truck kind of thing who was looking to his right. This was kind of, he was on my left looking to his right. So I was directly in front of him as I turned right at the roundabout when he just didn't stop and hit me with square on with the front of his truck.
Wow.
And knocked me off the bike. I had my laptop in my bag, which I was quite glad survived everything entirely. But my bike, both my wheels were a little bit twisted. And I'd kind of landed on my right hand and my right leg. The guy got out of the truck and he was like, "Oh, I didn't see you. You're in my blind spot." And again, he hit me with the front of his truck, so it was not his blind spot. He was looking for,
like, in
a
Back
car.
To the Future, where he says, why would you lend me your car and not tell me that it has a blind spot?
But this would be the blind spot was directly in front of the windscreen, apparently. So he got out, he tried to like pull me up and shake my hand to like say, "Oh, is that," but the hand that he was trying to shake was one I just landed on.
Ooh.
So it was bloody and kind of quite in pain. And he's like, "You okay? You okay?" I was like, "I think I'm all right." And he's like, "Okay." He got back in his truck and he drove around me, drove around my bike, lying in the middle of the roundabout, and he was off. But fortunately, somebody else came over and helped me to the side of the road. This was 2011, so I had a phone. And I gave my girlfriend a call. She came and picked me up. I had some soft tissue damage in my hand and in my leg. I still got a scar on my leg, actually. But I had to get a new bike. But nothing ever done with that driver or the truck at all. I went to the police and was like, "Just so you know, this happened." And they said to me, "That's good to know. We can only do something if he comes forward. If he turns himself in."
Because you didn't... Did you take down his license plate?
I didn't. I was...
Oh, okay, there you go.
I was sprawled on the floor trying to work out what to do. There you go.
Well, how are they supposed to find out who he is? Yeah, he's a guy driving a truck who apparently has a blind spot in the middle, in the front.
I gave a description, and the roundabout was directly outside of a university where there was CCTV. So they could have, I think, could have quite easily checked, but didn't. So either way, this guy is still out there today.
So if you're listening to this podcast, Jay wants you to come forward and tell everyone what you did. Great. Thank you. Thank you. See, we were able to add three new off-the-beaten-jack stories here. So a few stats about this season, okay, now that we're coming to a close. So first of all, not including this episode, because I don't know how many minutes this one will be eventually, but so we have 92 episodes that are a total of 3,073 minutes.
Okay? That's almost as long as the first cut of the film.
Which is, is basically 51 hours and 22 minutes of recordings. Okay, again, this is the final cuts. We're not talking about the edited ones because I have a few hours edited out of them. I even have one episode which I edited over an hour out of our conversation. So I won't tell anyone who that one is. You'll have to try and figure that out. Yeah. I know you know. That's not the point. It's not Jay. How's that?
I get all the inside info.
Jay gets inside info. He gets to hear my frustration.
Back to future shows.
That's right. He knows about my frustration of that episode, those episodes. But I think the edited versions came out really well. So, you know, everyone looks good in it. So that's fine. You know, in my opinion, hopefully the listeners.
I can't give away if I've listened to it or not, because that could reveal who the guest could have been.
Well, you've listened to every episode, so.
Of course, people don't know what is being recorded. Yes, right. It turned out great.
But you have listened to it, that we know, so that's fine. Okay, which comes out to an average of 33 minutes and about 23 seconds for each episode. Okay, and just to give an idea, I want to compare it to The Great Escape. So The Great Escape, we had a recording of 4,016 minutes, okay, which comes out to 66 hours and 93 minutes. Sorry, that doesn't make sense. 66 hours and 53 minutes. You can't have 93 minutes in an hour. You can, but it just wouldn't make sense.
It's a very short minute.
A 93-minute? That's a long minute.
A 93-minute hour.
Oh, a 93-minute hour, right. That's true. So, again, and there the average episode was 22 minutes and 54 seconds. So the irony of it is that this movie is 92 minutes, or we're talking about 92 episodes as opposed to 172 episodes. So we're talking about half. Okay, it's half the amount of episodes, just about. But we're only talking about a 1,000-minute difference between the two, which goes to show that the episodes of Plane Shit and Automobiles were a little bit longer than the ones from The Great Escape.
Well, I mean, you had more features on them, didn't you? You had all of the off the beaten track and the rank and the right. Rankings and all of the script differences.
Right, that's true. So. That's very true. But also there's the idea also here that there was more to talk about in Plane Shit and Automobiles because
there were certainly more locations.
More locations and more things to give history about.
Yeah. Well, which is odd given that there's actual real history in The Great Escape.
Yeah, but I wasn't giving history about, as everyone knows, I wasn't giving history about the movie. I was giving history about items or signs.
Yes.
Or
owned this bank that they run past.
There you go. Exactly. So, you know, and just wait. Season three is going to get even more in depth. Because there's
the
more to talk about.
History of the Amish population.
There you go.
Who, some of whom drive this truck that's in front of them for 2.5 seconds. Yeah, that kind of thing.
Exactly. That's what makes it fun. You know, it's very comprehensive, the way that we look at these things. So, as I've promised all season, that on the final episode, I would actually also reveal what my top fives are for the three different top fives that we've done. Okay, so first of all, we have Martin Monday. Okay, so Martin Monday, my top five movies. Number five. Actually, do you have any guesses, Jay?
Oh, God.
No. Okay, then don't.
I'm going to guess that Planes, Trains, and Automobiles are on your top, is your, at least your number two, if not number one, on all three of these lists you're about to do. But for Steve Martin, I'm going to guess that in your top five, I don't know what the order is going to be, but let's say Planes, Trains, Automobiles is in there. Roxanne is going to be in there. Maybe Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. Bowfinger. And, I don't know, Father of the Bride.
Okay, well, you get three out of five of them. So that's okay. Still pretty good. That's very commendable. Okay. So my number five is Father of the Bride.
Okay.
Okay. My number four is Grand Canyon. And that, the only reason that it's so low on my list, despite the fact that I love that movie, is because Steve Martin's character has just a few minutes of screen time throughout the movie. It's more of a Kevin Kline movie than a Steve Martin, but Steve Martin also delivers my favorite movie quote, which is, you know what your problem is? You haven't seen enough movies. All of life's riddles are answered in the movies. So, yeah, that's me. Makes sense. My number three is actually his role here in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. It is not in my first or second slot as you thought it might be.
Ridiculous.
My number two slot is his role in Parenthood as Gil.
Okay.
I love that role. I think it's such a perfect blend between, you know, comedy and drama. And he just plays that character so well. I mean, it's a great ensemble cast, but his character is just amazing there. And my number one is his role in Roxanne.
Yes. Okay. I knew you liked that one.
Yeah, I love that movie. So now I will actually, I've tallied up all of my guests. Okay. So I've had over the period of these 92 episodes, or 93 if you want to count today's, 22 people, including myself, who have given their rankings. The way that I did it was is that for every first place slot, you get 5 points, second place, 4, 3, 2, and 1. All right. So it's basically the opposite of the top five of how everyone did it. All right. So what movie do you think came in fourth place? Let's do it that
fourth,
way.
Hang on.
Fifth place. So okay, we'll start with fifth place. Sorry.
Start halfway through.
Sorry, I'm in fifth place. What movie do you think came in fifth place?
Bowfinger.
Well, the reason that I actually said before four is because there's a tie for four and five.
I was going to ask you, there a tie?
Yes, there was a tie. Okay. And the tie.
Yeah, I'm going to say
the tie. And Bowfinger is one of the two in the tie.
Oh, excellent. Let's say the other one then is, I'm trying to think what everyone said. Say Roxanne. I think a bunch of people said Roxanne.
Jay, that is amazing. That's
fantastic.
Great.
Okay.
All right. So Jay, you got both number four and number five. Both of them got 26 points.
Okay. I think I know
now,
what movie
for number three got 31 points.
Okay. I think I know what one and two are going to be, but I'm not sure which order. So number three is just going to be a guess. I am looking at his filmography right now. Probably not Billy Lynn's Long Halftone Walk. Nobody mentioned that at all. Number three, let's say.
And I will give you a hint. You actually, it was on your list. Does that help?
That is no help. That was a long time ago.
I'll give you even more of a hint. It was your number one.
Oh, it's Little Shop of Horrors.
There you go, Little Shop of Horrors.
I thought it was me between that and another film for the top two. So that hasn't helped me at all.
No. The Little Shop of Horrors got 31 points. Okay. Second place with 45 points.
See, I reckon that the film that we're talking about today is probably number one. So number two would then be, oh, I don't know. This is terrible to listen to. is it just bad podcasting? I can't think what, LA Story. I don't know.
No, the answer is The Jerk. The Jerk got 45 points.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And so number one was Planes, Trains, and Automobiles with 57 points.
Okay, that makes sense. Right. The Jerk, I don't think, has aged terribly well. So I wasn't sure if that would be very high up there.
Yeah, no, I would agree with you on that. But a lot of people seem to like it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't hate it. It's just, since I was last on, I have watched another Steve Martin film. I watched The Man with Two Brains, and I wasn't overly impressed with that film.
Okay, I would say rightfully so. But
yeah, I thought it was fine in places and goes just some, again, wouldn't be made today places, but my wife hated it and refused to finish watching it.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. What, because it was like a little too gory for her?
She's just like, it's not funny and it's too silly, I think, was her critique.
Okay, that's a simple critique.
Yeah.
Okay, so now we will move along to Hugh's Hump Day. So I will first give my top five. You have any guesses? So
Can I ask, are you just doing ones he directed, or are you including ones that he wrote as well?
My list is actually only four of them he directed and one he wrote.
Okay, see, when I did my list, I thought it was just directing. So all five of mine were from directing.
And you would change, would you change that?
I probably would have done, because I'm not, I think...
Did I think you want to change it now?
No, we're all good. I'll keep it as it was. I consider my list to be pure, and all of the other ones to be to be impure, to be incorrect. But I'll try and... I reckon the one that he wrote but didn't direct, so let's get that one out of the way first, on your list, I will say... One of the vacation films.
Nope.
I guess.
Nope.
No?
Nope.
No. Okay. Home Alone?
Nope.
Home Alone 2?
Nope. I don't think I've ever even seen Home Alone 2. I'm not a fan of Home Alone.
But it gets lost in New York.
Okay. And how does that help me?
Pretty in Pink?
Not a fan of that. I prefer Some Kind of Wonderful over that one if I have to choose between the two. Which is the same. It's the same. It's pretty much the same movie.
The Great Outdoors.
Nope.
No, okay, I'm going to stop trying to guess that. Okay, so the four that he directed that will be on the...
Okay, those will get... All right, so first of all...
PTA.
Well, we'll start with my number five first. So my number five is Mr. Mom, which I've always loved. It's such a fun movie. Michael Keaton does a great job in that movie.
I've never seen it.
Okay. It's pretty fun. Okay. So, all right, that gets 1 point from me. All right, so number four on my list is something he directed.
I'm gonna guess Uncle Buck.
No.
Okay.
It's actually his first directorial debut.
Oh, A Whole Bunch of Candles.
Exactly, and A Whole Bunch plus 16. There you go, 16 candles.
A Fistful of Candles.
Yes.
That's what it should have been called.
All right, my number three. What are you going to say?
Uncle Buck.
No, Ferris Bueller's Day.
Okay.
Which was also your number three. We both coincided on our number threes there. All right, my number two number is two, also your number two.
Oh, that was... Planes, Trains, and Automobiles?
That it was. And my number one is also your number one.
The Breakfast Club.
The Breakfast Club.
Okay.
There you go. All right. So we'll now do the tally of, you know, everyone who's been on. So number five on the list with 23 points.
Can you give me a breakdown as to how many of these are directed or written?
Again, we get
as we go through.
We get four. If, we get four and one.
Is number five a director or a
writer? Number five is directed. Number four is the written one, the one that he wrote. But it's only a discrepancy of 1 point between the two.
Okay,
so you have 23 and 24 points.
So five as a director, I will say that one is. I'm just gonna keep saying it, Uncle Buck.
No.
Okay.
Uncle Buck missed the cut by a few. It had 20 points.
Okay. So what is number five?
Number five is Weird Science with 23 points.
Okay. So number four, he wrote.
Okay. Number four with 24 points. He wrote it.
Christmas Vacation?
Nope. Christmas Vacation got 21 points also.
That Came probably close. Would have been on my list if I included the writing ones.
So you would have pushed it up here.
Yeah, well, there we go.
No, where would have been your list? Would it have been down on your list or higher on your list?
I think it probably would have been number four. It would have been three or four.
Three or four. So it wouldn't, it might, well, actually, it depends on what it would have been in place of.
Let's say I would have put it in third, pushing Ferris Bueller down to fourth. And I can't remember what my four and five were.
No, first of all, it would be third. Okay, well, okay, so your number five was Weird Science. Your number four was Uncle Buck. Your number three was Ferris Bueller. Number two was Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. And number one was Breakfast Club.
Okay, so my number four would have been Christmas Vacation. Number five would have been Home Alone 2, if I included writing.
So you would have checked out Uncle Buck and Weird Science.
Yes.
Right. So let's change those tallies and see if it would make a difference here. You know, we can make these changes. You know, why not?
Stats manipulation live.
There you go. Live. Okay, so you said Christmas Vacation would be number four?
Four. Yeah, that's the Christmas film that my family watched every year.
Okay. And Home Alone. Or Home Alone 2.
Home Alone 2.
Home Alone 2
would be number five. I love the first one, but the second one has the line, "Suck Brick Kid."
Okay, so...
best line ever written in film.
Making this manipulation would change things. So Weird Science would now only have 22 points instead of 23, and Christmas Vacation would have 23 points. So you've actually just pushed Christmas Vacation up to number five.
Well, there we go. Let's make that my official list, then.
Okay.
I'll be impure with the rest of it.
Okay. Now, Home Alone 2, your 1 point will give it a total of 4 points. So it doesn't really help very much.
Oh, well.
But Home Alone 1 is number four with 24 points.
Okay.
So, you know. And then we have a big jump because the next... point number of points is 49.
For number three, guess Breakfast Club.
Nope.
Ferris Bueller.
Nope.
Okay, I'll give up.
What else? Come on.
Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
There you go. Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Yes.
I figured that would be high.
So did I. It got 49 points. All right, okay. And then we jump up to number two, which has 62 points.
Is that Breakfast Club?
Nope.
Ferris Bueller?
Ferris Bueller, stay off.
Okay. Is Breakfast Club number one?
And number one has 70 points.
Is that the Breakfast Club?
That is the Breakfast Club.
I am surprised.
I'm not.
I thought more people preferred Ferris Bueller.
It's unbelievable, first of all, how many people put Breakfast Club as their top film.
Wow. Wow.
We have nine of 22 people gave it as their top film.
And two of them are on this conversation right now.
That's right. Two of us are talking about it right now. Where we're manipulating statistics as we go along.
Okay, well now we get to the truly difficult one to try and predict is John Candy.
Do you really think it's not going to be that difficult to predict?
I do, because he has so many... phenomenal performances.
All right, so now we'll get to Weekend Candy, where I will now give everyone's tally, but also beforehand I'll tell my top five. So my number five is his role in Cool Runnings.
Perfect.
My number four is his role as Barf in Spaceball. Number three is his role in Only the Lonely, which I always find to be a very you know, warm romantic comedy between him and Ali Sheedy, which you would never expect.
That's a film I've barely even heard of.
Okay, you should definitely take a look at it. My number two is his role in JFK.
Yep.
Which apparently I'm the only person who has put it on their top five. It was on an honorable mention last week or the week before. But
I mean, the problem with JFK is it's hard for anyone to stand out because there's so many people.
Yeah.
It's a great film.
Yeah.
And full of phenomenal performances by thousands of incredible characters.
Yes. Which is why you can always use that for you know, playing everything. Six Degrees of Kevin Bacon, because he's...
Yeah, well, I mean, Kevin Bacon's got a CV full of those kinds of
things. Yes.
Like JFK, Apollo 13, X-Men First Class.
A Few Good Men.
So many films. Yeah, exactly.
No, I love his role in here, though, because as was mentioned, I think it was Sully who mentioned it a few weeks ago, he actually, you know, shows his potential.
We could have got so many other great work from him.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah.
And my number one performance is Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Drum roll, please. Yeah, no one could see this coming.
Well, from me, it wasn't my number one in my last on the. You know, when dealing with my other two.
Right, any of the two.
That's right. This is the only one where it was my number one.
So I said this would be difficult to predict because in my ranking, I think there's like 11 different films that could be number one. For the group consensus. He has such a great career. He's been so memorable in so many films that I don't know how to predict how other people would rank his films.
Well, now we're going to test you and see how well you can do by guessing. So,
okay.
All right, number five with 29 points.
I'm going to say that's probably higher. Little Shop of Horrors?
Nope. Little Shop of Horrors only got 9 points.
Oh, dear. That's sad. Okay. You tell me, then. What is it?
The Great Outdoors.
Okay, I wasn't even on my list.
Okay. All right. The next up, number four, got 31 points.
I hope it's on there somewhere. Cool Runnings?
Excellent. Good guess.
Yeah.
All right. Number three has 33 points.
Okay. Uncle Buck?
Nope.
No. Okay. Home Alone?
Nope.
Oh, okay, I'll give up.
Spaceballs.
Oh, I thought it was going to be higher.
Nope.
Because everyone, I swear, every person who's been on the show has said Spaceballs.
There are a lot of people who said Spaceballs. Actually, you didn't.
No, I didn't. Yeah.
Actually, 11 people. Only half the people, said.
Half the people.
Well, half. And the highest ranking it got was a 4. It had 4-4.
So it was ranked by a lot of people, just not very high.
Yes.
Okay.
Correct. Okay. Number two at 45 points.
I'll go back to Uncle Buck for that one.
There you go. You're right.
Okay.
And Uncle Buck had it had 5 fourth place or second place showings and 2 first place showings, which is what helped bring it up.
Number one,
Drumroll Please, with 61 points.
Planes, Trains,
and Automobiles.
Yeah.
So, I gotta say, it's pretty amazing looking at these three rankings that we did here, and of all the 22 guests that we had, two out of three of these top fives, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, got the top rankings. And in the third one, the John Hughes one, where it only got 49 points, it's still pretty amazing because Ferris Bueller and Breakfast Club are both also very popular films.
I would say it isn't maybe a good way to do statistics is to poll people who have come on to talk about a specific film, whether they like that film or not.
Okay, but still, So in other words, you're saying that if I would have done this for The Great Escape would have also won in most of the ranking.
If you were doing your top five Steve McQueen films, top five prison escape movies, and top five World War II movies, then yes, I think The Great Escape would probably have been quite high on all of those lists, polling people who love The Great Escape enough to talk about it a minute at a time.
Okay, all right, that is fair. That's fair. But I don't know what to... there's no better way to do this. We can't, I'm not just going to poll people, on Twitter.
It's not a criticism of the system at all, but...
you're just saying that the system is a little fixed. Okay.
A little. Like when we covered Deep Blue Sea, a chapter by chapter, we didn't do any kind of rankings on it, but we had guests on after we covered the Deep Blue Sea films who... We waited to have those guests on who didn't like Deep Blue Sea as much as Mark and I did, after we'd finished covering the films, yourself included.
Yeah. Okay. No offense taken. That's fine. That's true. But as I've told you, I've enjoyed the movie more because of listening to your podcast.
Yes, that wouldn't have helped whilst we were making the podcast, because you hadn't listened to that.
That would not have helped. That is true. No, but it might have helped because I've when I have watched the movie since I've listened to it on your podcast, I still am not going through it, chapter by chapter.
This is true.
So had I, been a guest for a chapter by chapter, so I might have enjoyed it more by finding all these strange things that you guys might not have even noticed. Who knows? We'll never know.
It's the best way to appreciate a film you don't enjoy is to break it down into tiny chapters and talk about it on a weekly basis.
It depends on how much you don't enjoy it. If it's something that you detest, I think that's not the best way to go.
Well, I've said it before, Deep Blue Sea 2, we went into that project with Mark hating it and it making him a very sad person to even think about it. And now he loves it. It's one of his favorite films. So
okay, that's fair. That's completely fair. But what I'm saying is that if you had to choose a movie to do a Movies by Minute, you're not going to necessarily choose something, or chapter by chapter, excuse me, you're not going to choose something that you detest.
I mean, we did.
No, but you did that. You did that because you wanted to continue with the franchise.
We were committed.
You were committed to the franchise, exactly. Which is why, when one chooses a franchise, you have to be very careful to choose something that you know you're going to like all the movies in the franchise. If you're planning on doing,
yeah, you should pick something with say three great films, one good one, and one of the worst things ever committed to film. I agree. Yeah. That is not something you should definitely do in the future.
I don't know. Maybe I'll think about that. We'll have to. Who knows? But as of now, you know, you never know. All right. So you have anything else you want to say about Planes, Trains, and Automobiles before we get into the final technical aspects of this?
It's a pretty good film, I got to say.
Yeah. Do you feel that you've learned to appreciate it more having listened to, you know, it being broken down minute by minute, or it hasn't really changed anything?
I already thought it was a pretty perfect movie. I now appreciate how much more work went into it, mainly in culling down and tightening the belt of it to make it as efficiently perfect as it is.
Okay. So, all right. I agree with you 100%.
So, listening to the show has kind of made me appreciate the work that goes into these kind of films.
Yeah. It's not just, and you haven't even listened to the credits yet.
Funny.
Right. Yeah. Okay, no, I appreciate that. That's good. So, first of all, I want to once again thank all of my guests. So, thank you to Aaron Neuwirth, Sean German, Alan Sanders, J-Dub, Jim O'Kane, J-Bam, Bubba Wheat, Richard Kirkham, David Brooks, Mark Hoffmeyer, DJ Valentine, Heather Baxendale, Duncan Shields, Austin Pryor, Sully, Todd Liebenau, Travis Bow, or Bo, sorry, Jeanette Ward, Dana Nachman, and Brian Lockhart. And I also want to thank Bubba Wheat for creating this season's logo and poster. So thanks a lot, Bubba Wheat. It was really appreciated, and thank you for taking the time to put it together for me. And obviously, I want to give a big thanks to my pseudo co-host, my opening and closing guest, Jay Cluett. Thank you very much for joining me, you know, in finishing off both last season and beginning this season, and now finishing off this season. And I think this is a great part to talk about, you know, that anyone who likes listening to me and Jay talk, so you can actually come back tomorrow and listen to the beginning of season three, because Jay's back to talk about the first 5 minutes of the next movie that I decided to do. So
I can't wait to hear what it is.
I don't know. Should we tell people? Should we keep them, you know, hanging in there so they have to come back and listen tomorrow to find out what it is? Or do you think we should
hang in there out of a window from a high building that they're about to fall down from?
Could be. And just hold on to that watch, right? Which there's a connection between this movie and that, you know, that there's an expensive watch that has an integral part in the movie. In two different parts of the movie, the beginning and the end. How's that? Actually, was that newer minutes? Or no? No, you didn't.
Watch was
no,
in...
it was in the, I think it was in the third week that we're going to talk about it.
Oh, sorry, it was in my minutes.
Of in this film.
It's always watched.
That's right. So for anyone who hasn't guessed it yet, which I'm assuming you haven't because we just...
I mean, it's not that hard to guess what it is.
It's been brought up a lot of times on this season, even before I even decided that this is what we were going to do. But for anyone who is interested, and hopefully it's everyone that's listening, so come back tomorrow and we're going to be doing Die Hard. The 1988 Bruce Willis action masterpiece comedy classic. It's not a comedy.
That's some laughs.
It's not a comedy. So we're going to be going through Die Hard one yippee-ki-yay minute at a time. So hopefully everyone will come back and listen to it. Hopefully, you know, in the future, if all goes well with Die Hard, you know, hopefully I'll decide to do the sequels at some point, whether they're directly afterwards or whether I'll intersperse them with other movies along the way. Who knows? At this point, I don't know what I'm doing for season four. You know, I'm only, as of recording now, I'm only 8 weeks into the recording of season three's Die Hard. So we'll have to wait and see what I'm going to do for season four. But hopefully everyone has enjoyed listening to everything that myself and my guests have had to say about Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Unfortunately, I couldn't get any of the cast members who I contacted to be on any episodes or even do a special episode. You know, I had some great potential at the beginning because I actually had a response. Do you remember who I got the response from, Jay?
Larry Hankin.
That's right. Larry Hankin responded to me, but back in October, before I even started recording, that he was interested. But then when I got back in touch with him, he just didn't respond to my email. So unfortunately, Larry, if you are listening to this, you can send me an email and I will do a special episode with you afterwards. You know, I have no problem with that. Also, you know, Layla Robbins liked my tweet to her that I wanted her to be on the show, but that's all she did. She didn't respond beyond the like. So I don't know if that's because she has a production assistant that just likes, you know, tweets that she gets or not. But Layla, if you're interested, feel free to contact me. I will do a special episode with you also. I would love to hear your thoughts on all of what ended up on the cutting room floor and whether you felt that was the right move for the movie itself or not. Who knows? And anyone else I got in contact with didn't respond at all. So those are my two closest shots at getting real interviews for this. You know, it still won't be up on the level of David McCollum, who for me was a great get. Was it a year and 3 months ago when I was able to have that phone interview with him, which I
so who's great. Your ideal get from Die Hard? All right, Reginald Bell
it would
Johnson,
be Reginald Bell Johnson. Be a good one. It would definitely be Reginald yeah. Bell Johnson, who I've tried to contact but still have gotten no response from him. So
William Atherton, he's out there somewhere. Could be fun.
No,
Hart Bochner.
Yeah, I don't know if Hart Bochner. I mean, I like him. I don't know how much I would, you know, run after him to get him on that. You know, William Atherton, it would be an interesting conversation talking about, you know, Die Hard and also talking about Ghostbusters, you know, yeah. Those type of roles. If he was happy with those type of roles, or he preferred the type of roles that he had earlier. You know, I still remember him from Centennial, which, you know, was a very long miniseries from 1978. So, but I can't really think of anyone else that, I mean, obviously.
Al Young.
Nah.
Yeah, he'd be great. He's in everything.
I don't know. And again, if he's interested, he can contact me. That would be great. You know, I would do it. You know, I don't think I would be able to get Bruce Willis to do it. You know, that's
probably not.
You know, unfortunately, Paul Gleason has passed on, so he will not be. And so has Alan Rickman. Alan Rickman would be the best guest to get on this, but you know, that, I mean,
Alexander Goodenough would have been good, but he's also passed.
Yeah. So I don't think any of them are really going to be
James Shigeta
helpful to get interviews with at this point.
Devereaux White could be fun.
Devereaux White might be fun to get. That's true.
I'm sure if you manage to get anybody, it would be great.
Yeah.
Robert Darby, I've heard, is an excellent, terrifying interview.
I don't know if that's what I want. You know, because he'd actually be able to, he'd have to start telling me about the, you know, how he felt making jokes in movies, because he's a very serious, he plays serious characters all the time.
I think you just have to get talking about his lounge singing. He has several albums of music that he's released, so just get him talking about that and you're golden.
Interesting. Okay. I'll keep that in mind if I'm able to ever
try and reunite him and Grandel Bush together.
Yeah, that would be interesting. All right, well, I want to thank you, Jay, for joining me.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
It's been a pleasure. We'll get back to you tomorrow to talk about Die Hard for the rest of this week. And obviously, happy July 4th weekend to everybody. Happy July 4th.
I do not concur with that statement.
You don't concur with wishing someone something that they celebrate as opposed to something that you celebrate?
Not for July 4th, no. That's a day.
Oh, not for July 4th. Commiserating. One thing, no, but you're saying since personally I don't celebrate Christmas, I can't wish you a Merry Christmas when it comes around?
I feel like Christmas isn't a celebration against you. Whereas July...
Wait, one thing, you're saying July 4th is against Jay Clewitt in particular, or it's against all the Brits?
This is all in jest. Happy July 4th, everyone, for today. We let you win. We let you have your country.
There you go. You did it in order to be able to get Steve McQueen and James Garner to, you know, to have their July 4th celebration for Tom.
Indeed, indeed. Down the British.
That's right. How are you guys managing in the colony? You know? All right. So, Jay, you want to tell people how they can get in touch with you?
Yes, of course. So you've mentioned it. Deep Blue Sea, the podcast, is my still active podcast. We've been through the entire Deep Blue Sea trilogy, one DVD chapter at a time. We're now looking at Deep Blue Sea adjacent films, which is films featuring sharks or aquatic action, or directed by Rennie Harlan. We had Rob on recently to talk about Born American, Rennie Harlan's first film.
That was recently? It wasn't like 3 months ago?
I mean, it was recently enough. It's between my guest appearances on this show, so it counts.
Okay, that's fair.
And you've mentioned it already, in a couple of weeks after this gets released, we'll start doing Con Air, the podcast. We'll be going through Con Air, not a DVD chapter at a time, because there's not enough DVD chapters to talk about the glory of Con Air. So we're doing 40 chapters. Myself and your other guest, Mark Hoffmeyer, are going through that. You can listen to me once a month over on the Lambcast, where I host a movie trivia episode called Lampity, which is based on Jeopardy. Rob always sends in some questions for that, always grateful for that. And that's always a lot of fun. And I have a personal site, lifevsfilm.com, lifevsfilm.com, which is very occasionally updated with movie reviews or just general life goings on. But most recently, it's the only known place online you can find the lyrics to the music video at the end of Shark Night 3D.
Correct lyrics or the incorrect lyrics?
The correct lyrics, as far as I can tell.
No, because you guys had the discrepancies there.
There was, it's the average of the two. So we had I listened to it and tried to work out what the lyrics were. Mark found a video online that had some suggested lyrics that we determined were not entirely correct. And so we took the average of the two.
Right. Okay. That's fair.
If you don't know what we're talking about, watch Shark Night 3D. And then the music video at the end of it, if you're in America, is glorious and terrible in equal measures.
And then Jay had a podcast where he talked about it.
Yes, on his 100th episode. 100th episode was dedicated to this ridiculous music video.
100 episodes? You guys are. I'm surprised you guys are only on 100 after all this. You know, this is my 265th episode.
Well, we do one a week, so you do too many.
Too many?
Yes.
I don't think there's such a
thing. Every other minute by minute show, we'll do a season and then we'll have a rest. And prepare for the next one. You just roll. You add in extra episodes on the weekends to it starts on a Monday.
Because you told me last time that I can't start in the middle of the week.
Take a few days off.
Trust me, I take a lot of time off.
You should have finished this one on a Wednesday and took the Thursday and Friday off and start the following week. Then that wouldn't be July 4th, the start of Die Hard. That classic July 4th movie.
Be nice, Jay. Be nice. All right, and
more content to listen to. It's great.
That's right. More time to waste. There you go. Or more time to learn new things. How's that?
There we go.
He's looking from both perspectives. What did you say? Glorious and terrifying at the same time? What was the phrase you said before?
Yeah, I can't remember. Something along those lines.
Something like that. So, yeah. All right, and finding me is very simple. You can find, do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Facebook. And you can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. So until tomorrow, when we will talk about a completely different movie and no longer use the same tagline. But until tomorrow, you're fine.
Yo, yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.